this sutta called the Ratana Sutta is on the Triple Refuge. Triple Refuge refers to the Buddha, a well-informed Sangha, and the Buddha's Dhamma. It's a sutta that's similar in purpose as the Kalama Sutta. The Kalama Sutta is sometimes called the Letter to the Kalamas. It's a teaching where the Buddha describes how to choose an authentic Dhamma practice, and I'll give that sutta in a couple of weeks. We've heard it a few times here. The Ratana Sutta is similar in that the Buddha is teaching this this local group that is devastated by a natural disaster, that once you take care of your physical needs in this chaos of a world prone to suffering, then you establish the dukkha. And the important thing is that it is within this horrible natural occurrence that the Buddha does actually develop the Dhamma in these folks. As an example to all of us, that no matter what's occurring, even if there's a situation like this, we'll get to it in a moment, there's no reason to not practice the Dhamma and take true refuge. Refuge is a place of comfort and safety. And so the Buddha is saying that in the midst of all of this suffering, there is a true refuge. There is a place of comfort and safety that we can depend on. We can be assured that it's always there. There's a sidelight to this. It's very interesting. I hope it is to you. Years ago, let's see who's joining us. Mary's joining us. Hi, Mary. I used to spend a lot of time in Hawaii. I was very fortunate. And one of the things that I noticed, on all the islands, they have something called a city of refuge. And most islands had more than one of these cities of refuge. I think Big Island had six. I could probably remember five if I had to. But they were remarkable places in that going back thousands of years, the Hawaiian Islands were always in a state of war amongst the islands. There was always little kingdoms that were fighting over other fighting with other kingdoms to take over more of the islands. And this was going on. This is just part of their history. But Kamehameha, this is actually not going back a couple thousand years. 600 years? Going back a few years, Kamehameha, it would be called Kamehameha the Great or Kamehameha the Second, established on all of the islands. Now, he did not yet have rest control of all the islands. But he established on all the islands these cities of refuge. And the idea was that if you were so totally overwhelmed by the violence of war, and if you could make it to one of these protected places called the city of refuge, you could stay there in safety, a true refuge, until the conflict was over, and then you were free to go. Isn't that remarkable? Imagine if we could do that today, if we could have that much compassion for our so-called enemies, that we would provide a place of refuge even while we're fighting them. And they really are remarkable places. You know, Hanau is one that comes to mind. There's a place down near Captain Cook that is just remarkable in its beauty and how it feels. Anyway, so this is the same idea, but the Buddha's providing a real city of refuge, a real refuge through his Dhamma, through this triple refuge. At that time, the city of Asali, this is the Ratana Sutta. At that time, the city of Asali, there was widespread famine and spreading disease. There were many dead bodies as the conditions overwhelmed the ability to properly dispose of the bodies. The local citizens sought out the Buddha's help, who was nearby in Rajagaha. The Buddha arrived in Asali a short time later with a large number of monks, including Ananda. Just before the Buddha's arrival, torrential rains helped the situation somewhat by cleansing the landscape of rotting corpses and clearing the air and water. Prior to his presenting this discourse, he instructed his attending monks to walk through the city and do what they could to ease the physical sufferings of the citizens and to begin to individually present his teachings. So there's a lot right in that one line. What the Buddha's being an example of is that no matter how um, internally intellectual the Dhamma may seem at times, we cannot overlook our basic physical needs. In other words, we need to take care of our food, clothing, medicine, and shelter. That's simply part of Dhamma practice, and that's an example here. He didn't come blow into town and line everybody up and say, listen, here's the Eightfold Path, go and meditate, and you're good to go. Because again, that would be cruel. He had the means within him to help the physical suffering of the people in a direct way. That's part of the Dhamma. At the formal teaching, the Buddha then presented a way to bring true refuge from the stress and suffering of the world and to put an end to all dukkha. The Buddha's words. May all beings assembled. Let me say that again. I'm not being overly dramatic, but these words are just as appropriate to us now in our Sangha right now, 2,600 years later. So look at it that way. The Buddha and his Dhamma are teaching us right here, right now, what true refuge is in this world that is just the same and just as prone to suffering as it was 2,600 years ago. Excuse me. May all beings assembled have peace of mind. Does everybody have peace of mind?
Yes.
This stuff works. Not all the time. But you know where to find it, right? Mm-hmm. That's a refuge. May all beings assembled have peace of mind. May all beings assembled listen mindfully to these words. May you all radiate goodwill and love and kindness to all who offer help and understanding to you. Understand, there is no more precious jewel, no more refuge, no more comfort than the Buddha. And the Buddha is holding himself out, excuse me, not as a miracle worker who can end all the suffering in the world. He's holding himself as someone who can guide you through suffering, an awakened one. There is no more comfort than an awakened one, than the Buddha. As woodland groves in the early heat of summer are crowned with blossoming flowers, so is a sublime Dhamma leading to the calm and peace of Nirvana or Nibbana. The peerless and excellent awakened one, the teacher of true understanding, the teacher of the noble path is the Buddha, the one who has awakened. We take refuge in the Buddha. The Buddha continues. There is no more precious jewel than the teachings of the Buddha, the Dhamma. Understanding this brings true liberation and freedom. The Buddha, calm and mindful, has experienced the cessation of clinging and desire. The deathless state of Nirvana or Nibbana has been attained. When the Buddha is referring to the deathless state, he's not referring to he's now found a way to live in a physical body forever and ever. Again, the context is so important. The deathless state means that there's no more ignorance. When the Buddha is referring to death or living death, he's talking about living a human life rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths. That's death or living death to the Buddha. The deathless state, again, is not a way of developing physical immortality. It simply means that we have abandoned ignorance. We're no longer dying each moment because of our ignorance. The deathless state of Nirvana has been attained. The Buddha teaches the Noble Eightfold Path that unfailingly brings concentration, liberation, and freedom. There is no more precious jewel than the Buddha's Dhamma. Again, when you read something like this, which is prevalent, this isn't unique, or even all that rare, how as Buddhist practitioners in general, how did we get to the point where we dismiss the Eightfold Path? Or we refer to something as the middle way when it really has nothing to do with the Eightfold Path? Matt and I just had a conversation about that. When the Buddha says consistently, the Eightfold Path is the path. Next week's? I got so many different teachings going on in my head. The Thursday after the retreat, the talk will be on the 20th chapter of the Dhammapada called the Magavaga. It's an entire chapter about the importance of the Eightfold Path. There is no more precious jewel than the Sangha. Of course, the Buddha is talking about a Sangha that has developed within the framework of his Dhamma. Understanding this brings true liberation and freedom. The virtuous ones who bring the Dhamma, They are the jewel of the Sangha. Those with steadfast minds, free of clinging, they are the jewel of the Sangha. Those that understand with wisdom the Four Noble Truths, they are the jewel of the Sangha. Do you all know with wisdom the Four Noble Truths? Honestly.
Yeah.
Yes.
You are the jewel of the Sangha. That's really the point of this whole teaching. That I'm not. I'm part of it. The Buddha's not. He's part of it. The Dhamma's not. He's part of it. You are. Because you are all part of it. Let me put it another way, because it relates to something that Lorna might touch on if she doesn't, I'll prod her to it. There's 11 people, 12 people in here. There's 12 experiences of the Dhamma right now. And in our focus through the Dhamma, the unity of the Dhamma or the uniting aspects of the Dhamma makes these 12 Dhammic experiences one that we can share, not one. In other words, you're not trying to have my experience, I'm not trying to have yours, we talked about earlier. But there are 12 examples of true refuge in here. And you just answered that question, so that's the answer. We are refuge. We are true refuge. Jeez, I guess we gotta use that word. Those that gain true insight and abandon self-delusion, doubt, and indulgence in meaningless rites and rituals, they are the jewel of the Sangha. Okay, every one of you. Those beyond despair and evil doings, well, maybe not every one of you, those beyond despair and evil doings, they are the jewel of the Sangha. Those whose understanding arises from the support of the Sangha, who can no longer conceal the truth from themselves, due to the Sangha, that's all of you, by the way, right?
Mm-hmm.
They are the precious jewel of the Sangha. So you've heard this sutta quite a few times. I don't know that you've ever heard it quite this way, have you? Or related it this way to your own participation in a real Sangha. But you are. Those whose karma is extinguished, we're working on it. The future of no concern, with rebirth ending, due to the support of the Sangha, this is the precious jewel of the Sangha. It's the end of the Ratana Sutta. Does everybody understand it? As simply another practical teaching, it is just that. The Buddha is speaking to us again from 2,600 years ago, encouraging us to stay focused on what a true refuge is. And again, I hope I'm not being overly dramatic. Isn't it remarkable how useful and effective those words still are today? And that if a group of monks and nuns didn't take it upon themselves to preserve these teachings the way they did, they wouldn't be here. There might be something else called Buddhism, but it wouldn't be this. And it wouldn't be something that we could honestly take a true and effective refuge in. That's tonight's talk. Let's just go around on any special questions, and we'll start with Jane.
Hi, John.
Hi, Jane. How are you?
Wonderful. How are you?
I'm good. You ready for a retreat?
Oh, I'm so ready.
How did you enjoy tonight's talk?
I like the word refuge. I mean, I think that's just the perfect word.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? That's just what the Dhamma is. Well, I'm glad you joined us today. Matt, you got 12 minutes, by the way. Casey.
Thank you.
Mary, how are you?
I'm good, John. How are you?
I'm good. Wait, I just lost the screen. Ah, there you are. How's your practice, Mary?
My practice is good. And I like this sutta because it's basic and it's a reminder. We get carried away in our heads about many things, and this is a reminder to come back to center.
Yeah.
And to come back to the Sangha, the Eightfold Path, the teachings, and that refuge that we need in order to exist in a balanced way, in the phenomenal world. So this is very good. I'm very much excited about
the retreat. I didn't catch that last part. You broke up.
I'm looking forward to the retreat.
Yeah, me too. Thank you, Mary. Thanks for joining us tonight. Matt, how are you?
Good, John. Good to be here. Thanks, everybody. It's good to hear the sutta again, and I think you're right. I don't know if I've felt it in this way before, so I appreciate that. I look forward to seeing all those who will attend the retreat on the retreat.
Thank you, Matt. Lorna, good to see you.
I think you were referring to what we said earlier about the rising and passing away.
Yeah.
Right. I'm really piggybacking on some instruction that John gave Jen on Saturday morning. In what Jen says, he realized that Jen was probably not focusing very much on the passing away in her meditation. And when he said
the exhalation.
Sorry?
The exhalation, the out-breath.
The out-breath, yeah. And when he said that, I thought, yeah, I do that. I don't maybe focus on the out-breath in the passing away of the breath quite as much as maybe the in-breath. So I've sort of been concentrating on the arising and the passing away of the breath. And I've realised that the if you focus on the passing away of the breath, you're focusing on the passing away of almost all your yesterdays, all your last moments, yesterdays, last years. You're letting it all go, and you don't you're not carrying it with you all the time. You're not carrying the burden of our thoughts all the time. You just let it, you still understand it, they're still there, but you're just not carrying the burden. And I've seen that in, as I say, just focusing on the out-breath in your meditation since Saturday. I've sort of noticed that. And it also, it also clears your mind for the next arising. As I say, you're not carrying everything with you. You haven't got that heavy burden with you. So the next arising is a little more cleaner and crisper. You could almost say without pollution, without a dusting, not in a heavy way, but there's a dusting of pollution that comes with you if you let it, by not focusing on the passing away. So you could say that, you know, you're not carrying the pollution of our own thoughts with us all the time. You know, if you let it pass away, you have a crisper, cleaner next arising, which is the Dharma. And I think what you've asked me to look at today is that you can always go to your cushion, go to a quiet place, go to a hut or root of a tree, sit quietly and just focus that and just get everything sort of back in perspective a little bit.
Yeah. Wow. That's great. Thank you. The what Jen was talking about that led to this was that she said she was able to recognize the arising of phenomena, but she would finding herself getting stuck there with that. And that's an important part, but you're missing half the cycle. I mean, it's the beginning of true useful mindfulness. And the reason why the Buddha taught meditation the way he did in the Four Foundations of Mindfulness is a direct experience of the impermanence of all phenomena. In other words, the in-breath is the experience of phenomena arising. In the exhalation, the out-breath is the direct experience of phenomena passing away. And a good example of how we hold on to things is if you're scared over something, you catch your breath, don't you? And you usually don't go to an exhalation very quickly. In fact, sometimes you have to almost force yourself for that. The Four Foundations of Mindfulness teach us how to be mindfully present and aware for phenomena arising and passing away by being mindful of our breath arising and passing away. And that's why that instruction is so important. It's not just the in-breath. It's the out-breath too. And it's being mindful of the in-breath and the out-breath, the inhalation and the exhalation. But that's all. But if any of you aren't noticing directly that out-breath, be mindful of it. Start incorporating that thought to just be mindful of that out-breath. Because that's the, again, that's the experience of impermanence in our meditation. And it allows us then off our cushion to carry that well-established seclusion from our cushions, off our cushions and into our world, and stay secluded in the world, in this chaotic world that's prone to floods and disasters and all kinds of things. But in the middle of that, we carry our refuge with us. Kevin, good to see you. Thank you.
Good to see you. Thank you very much for that talk, the timeliness of it.
It's been timely.
I don't have anything to add with what you just said. That was really neat how that came up there. So.
Yeah, it was.
Thank you.
Andrew, good to see you.
Good evening, John. Well, Lorna's analogy of the pollution of thoughts is a key one, and the out-breath to me has always just been just exhaling all of that or portion of pollution each time. After I take an in-breath. So that's been helpful for me to be conscious of in the out-breath.
Yeah, it is. Thank you. If you're not cognizant of it, you miss it, don't you? You don't know you're... I don't know why you were... When Lorna mentioned it, you were talking, I was thinking there was a time I was driving back towards L.A. from Joshua Tree. And it's always there. When you look back across the San Bernardino Mountains, you always see the fog of Los Angeles just sitting there like this huge wall. But you don't notice it when you're in it, do you? I mean, you might cough a little bit more. And a confused and deluded mind is just that. It's polluted. It's such a great way of saying it. But the Dhamma is the wind that blows it all away. You know, you don't have to do anything else. But. Helen, good to see you.
Thank you, John. Good to be here. Good to be here with everyone. The Sangha is a wonderful retreat.
Yeah.
And when I've meditated, you know, I'm very conscious of the rising and the passing. And if I realize my thoughts are wandering in my mind, I say the words rising and passing, rising and passing. But I love what Lorna said about being mindful of, you know, things that might be ill will that you're not even aware that you're carrying, and sort of using that opportunity to even bring them in and then wash them out. Just kind of, you know, this whole study is a study in delicate layers. And I often think of peel the onion, and sometimes you cry. Someone once wrote me a beautiful song called Let It Out and Let It Go. And that's what rising and passing, the inhalation and the exhalation is.
Yeah.
And it's such a beautiful tool that you always have with you. It's always accessible. And I'm grateful.
Me too. Thank you, Helen. David, good to see you tonight.
Good evening. This community of admirable friends is a refuge in... I'd like your comment about each one of us is at a different point, but we're all entered into the stream.
Yeah.
And part of that community is each one of our stories, each one of our paths, but we're all within the guidance of the Four Noble Truths and Eightfold Path. So even though I don't know all of you real well, there's a commonality, and there's a I understand the intention of everyone. So that is a refuge that you don't have outside often.
Thank you. Wow. Beautiful, David. We See you, Matt. Thank you, Matt.
See you.
See you Thursday. The Buddha gives us this place of refuge, put it that way, is a place where we do actually come together, isn't it? In reality, it's not a concept like we are all one. And what David just said, and what we're talking a little bit tangentially about, is how the Buddha taught the Dhamma. He taught to see phenomena in its absolute discreteness, meaning each and every aspect of phenomena arises and passes away. And for all practical purposes, there is no interconnection or interdependence. Physically, we can prove that everything, Carl Sagan used to say, we're all star stuff. And that's true. There's elements of that. But as far as the Dhamma is concerned, it's not helpful to ignore the fact that we are discrete individuals, but we unite in this singular refuge, or triple refuge, I probably should say. And it's a coming together based on reality, isn't it? It doesn't introduce additional tension in our lives for any reason, does it? We just come together as Dhamma practitioners, and we do it once a week or whenever we do it. But we also do it not just in this room. When we take that seclusion out of this room and off our cushions and out into the world, we're carrying that unifying refuge wherever we go. Isn't it remarkable? You know, it's one of the reasons why I want to teach it now, is after the end of the Dhamma study, but also heading up into retreat. And I know that not all of you are going on retreat, but you are all going on retreat, aren't you? Because we are, you are gaining the benefit. We all are gaining the benefit, is the way I want to say it. We all are gaining great benefit from each other's Dhamma practice. Because it's not conceptual. We're actually making real differences, and we're able to talk about it and inspire others about what we're doing. Mm-hmm. It's wonderful. Bonnie, good to see you.
Good to see you too. It's when you're talking about the jewel being made up of all the different faceted aspects of each one of us, it's really, in a way, I see it as creativity. Because you can, you know, everybody has the same seeds or the same kernel of a thought, but we all will manifest it in understanding and come into the path at different places, but be supported by the whole structure. So nobody's going to be the same, but has the same benefits of looking at this very focused path. So anyway.
Yeah, that's great. And it's the Dhamma that's guiding us. And I know it's not a political affiliation, it's not our interest in archery or whatever it might be. We come together for the Dhamma. And because we practice it in a pure and authentic way, again, there's no tension, there's no room for second guessing each other, is there? We just do it. We come here and we practice the Dhamma. Again, what the Buddha was talking about. We take true and authentic refuge in the Dhamma. We don't try to make it better, you know. It's just, it is what it is. Thank you. Liz, good to see you.
Good to see you. Good to be here. It's always nice to get benefit from other people's interpretation of the Dhamma, too, because sometimes that's the thing you've been working on.
Yeah.
And someone has an insight or a breakthrough that is helpful. So I am looking forward to the retreat and meeting some new people that are maybe only involved through the computer.
Yeah, we have an interesting new group coming too, I think 4 or 5 folks. So.
Mm. From all
That's
over
great.
The world, the world, all over the country or from the area?
Yep.
I
should remember, but I don't. Actually, one is from South Jersey, I think. Down.
And Larry's from Long Island, right?
Who?
Larry.
Larry's from Long Island.
Jane's from Maine.
No, Jane is from Bethlehem, Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay.
There's a guy from Albany, although he may not make it. There's another woman. Boy, I don't remember where she's coming from. No, her name is Chris. I just can't remember where she's from. There's someone from Ohio that may be coming. They're looking at it today. They just came across the website a few days ago and said, I got to come on retreat. Might be good. But anyway, there's got to be 4 or 5 new people. It's always fun to have new people on our retreat too. But they're also all eagerly studying the Dhamma too right now. Russ, good to see you.
Thank you. Yeah, I just this seemed like a nice straightforward view of, you know, you have the Buddha, what he brought to us in terms of the teachings. We have the teachers who help us understand it, and then, you know, we come together to try to understand it together.
Yep.
We all bring our own perspective, and I think it helps.
Yeah, I think it does too.
The Sangha comes in, you know. It's like I get new things from other people that I didn't think about that way. You know?
Yeah.
It
is. Thank you. It's so important. And even this part of this is somewhat rare. The fact that we all participate. You don't have to. I think you all know that. But we all participate in the Sangha. It's not just me. And you can say it's not. If I'm representative of the Buddha, it's not. It's still not just the Buddha and the Dhamma, is it? Just like the Buddha's time, it's the Buddha, the Dhamma, and a well-focused Sangha.
Mm-hmm.
When I start the retreat, I think some of you might miss it when I say this, that our retreats are very similar to the way the original Sangha was. That's how they lived their lives. Because we still have the Dhamma here that we can unite around. And so what we're doing right here is very similar to what used to happen every night at the original Sangha. I think we're going to go to 7 nights a week, by the way. Eric, good to see you.
Good to see you, John. It's good to be here. And yeah, I like what Lauren was saying about the out-breath.
Yeah.
I was actually just like in the meditation tonight. I was focusing on that, and it was funny that she brought it up, because I did feel that it was like so distracted, I guess you could say, in my head. And like the different tools that you were talking about tonight, I think that, like, for me, they're all is equally important. Like, for my own understanding. So yeah, it was a good talk.
Thank you. I'm glad you're here, and that it is just that the experience of your in breath and your out breath is an experience of impermanent phenomena. And it takes both components of it. You know? It's interesting that we do that, though, isn't it? Our even a mind that is prone towards developing the Dhamma, there's still an aspect of grasping, meaning, well, it's breath meditation, let me get to the breath. And you forget that you're only just in half your practice. But even that half of practice brings a lot of benefit, doesn't it? We'll make it a whole practice from now on. Hey, Frank.
It's good to be here.
Good to see you.
It's good to be a part of this Sangha, well focused, like you said, and I appreciate the teachings. I use them every day, all throughout the day. So it's, I think the sutta that you taught last week about entering the stream and cutting off the hindrances with the side channels.
Yep.
Came to mind when I was listening to everyone talk. It's really interesting how fast ignorance can happen in my everyday life when I'm getting caught up in, like I had something happen today with a family member at work, and it's all about eye making, and studying the Dhamma is all about, for me, understanding ignorance and emptying myself of that. And when I become mindless of the hindrances or the 7 factors of awakening, I can get swept away in that stream. And so the Dhamma and my meditation and, you know, the people that I'm practicing this with becomes like an island in the stream almost.
Yeah.
And I could feel the agitation from earlier today all the way through coming up here this afternoon, and I was talking with Eric about it and how it happened so quickly, and I was eye making, and it's really, I was in the wrong view, and if I was in right view, I could have developed a little bit of compassion for this family member, even though it might have been wrong, they might have been wrong in their stance or where they are. I could have had a deeper understanding and not felt all the stress and the dukkha. But by the time I got up here, it was completely calm and peaceful. So it was like coming here helps it with that.
Yeah. And like Lorna taught us tonight, when you take your out-breath, it's all gone, isn't it?
Yeah, when you forget about the out-breath, then you can't find the breath.
Yeah. And the looking back on that experience, you now recognize that that wasn't you. That wasn't yourself.
It was like the phenomena that arises from ignorance happened so quickly.
And that's not you. That's not mine.
And I completely understand what Lorna was saying, because she said that a couple of years ago it had helped me out.
Yeah.
And I noticed that when I don't not focus, but aware of my out-breath, it's harder for me to be on the breath. It's like leads to distraction very easily.
Yeah. I don't know that I've ever even said this, because it's kind of like a little trick, but if you are having difficulty with just experiencing your out-breath, make it a loud one. Blow it out.
Yeah.
Just to give yourself the feel of it. But it's not meditation or the four foundations of mindfulness, shamatha, vipassana, meditation, is a complete breath meditation.
Well, there's those little spaces between the in-breath and the out-breath that are nice and peaceful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what Lorna called a couple of years ago the head of the arrow, the point. So you do the in-breath, and then you do the out-breath, and it's right there. It's right there, and that's something Lorna said a couple years ago. Yay, Lorna.
And that,
when she used to sit next to me, and her luminance would overflow onto the seat I was sitting in. I don't get it as much anymore now that you moved away.
And Lorna won't admit to knowing what she does. That pause between your in-breath and your out-breath is also metaphor for the things in our life that we want to maintain ambiguity about. I mean, we don't care. They don't affect us. Pardon me?
Is that desire? Because there's a tension of that in-between that I've always envision it as like desire, something that you're trying to like. If you really pay attention to it, it's a space, and there's a tension, and then there's a release.
Yeah, and so in that, there's a lot going on in that in that brief. And so sometimes it is, you'll find distraction in the between the in breath and the out breath, and that's desire, but the ambiguity, and I think the reason why we have such a hard time connecting the out-breath to the in-breath is because we are disconnected from much of our life, meaning the aspect of our lives that don't get our attention is where most of us live in, but we are ambiguous to it. We don't even notice it. It's an aspect of ignorance because it doesn't have our ego-based attention. We don't even consider it in our life. And this is where the real meaning of life comes upon moving towards awakening. Because then all these moments in life that we just dismissed because it didn't grab my ego's attention are now vivid in our life.
Most of mine are, where did I put that?
Yeah, I'm getting there too. So again, we're getting a little bit off the topic tonight, but that right meditation is the microcosm of the macrocosm. It's such an essential part of meditation, and I think you've heard me say it. It's both a very practical experience, but it's also at the same time metaphorical of just living life. Something arises, excuse my runny nose, and something passes away, just like life. My life arises, and in the blink of an eye, it passes away. That annoyance from this afternoon arises. But in the blink of an eye and one good breath, it's gone. And I'm at peace again. I've taken refuge. What a wonderful class. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Yeah, really, what a great class. It is remarkable. There will not be a Thursday talk or a Saturday talk this week because we will be on retreat, but we'll be back next Tuesday. We'll finish with metta, as we always do. These are the Buddha's words on metta from the Karaniya Metta Sutta. And this is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing and gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings. Radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Thank you all for a wonderful class tonight. Peace. Thank you, Jane. Thank you, Mary.
Good night, John.
Thank you. Good night, John.
Good night,
everyone.
Good night, Mary.
See you Thursday.
See you Thursday.
Thank you for listening. I rely on donations to support these talks. If you find benefit from these talks, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. I welcome your questions and comments. To contact me and for guided meditations and instructions, Dhamma articles, recorded talks, and videos, please visit becoming-buddha.com. These talks are copyrighted and are distributed under a Creative Commons License 4.0. Peace.